Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis, as always. Kermit Gosnell, guilty on three out of the remaining four murder charges against the newborn babies, guilty of involuntary manslaughter against the female patient who died due to the drug overdose, guilty, I believe, of over 200 counts, most of them related to violation of state laws in terms of cleanliness and sanitary standards. So for the most part, the verdict we were hoping for at this point now, it's just a matter of whether he's sentenced to death or life in prison. The good news is that this monster is getting what he deserves in this case, and I think it potentially changes the debate on abortion now that some of the people who were so reluctant to cover the actual trial seem to be interested in the verdict.
Yeah, quite a bit for a local crime story, as the Washington Post health beat reporter characterized this. As much as it's hard to feel good about this turn of events, I think this is good news in that for a while, Greg, I really wondered if we were going to have a hung jury on this, that there would be somebody on that jury who would be seeing this through a political lens and say, look, what this guy did was terrible, but if I say he's guilty of murder, this will somehow discredit the cause of pro-choice folks and abortion, and thus I need the country to kind of avert their eyes from this horror, and I need everybody to kind of insist that there's nothing really important going on here. Because I think there's two things going on here. The first is, one, what Gosnell was doing in his most horrific examples that we won't go into detail here because there's probably somebody out there eating their lunch, you know, it's not that different from perfectly legal partial birth abortion. I mean, it's a gruesome procedure even under the perfectly legal, quote-unquote, best of circumstances. And I think, you know, one of the reasons this remains legal and one of the reasons, you know, so many Democrats have no problem insisting that partial birth abortion must remain legal is because they don't look that hard at it. Whatever you think of abortion in general, this type of abortion is so monstrous and horrific, we have to be able to draw the line somewhere and say, no, this is not acceptable. So there's that angle, and thankfully nobody in that jury was swayed by that mentality. And the second thing that comes out of this is, look, we don't know how many more Kermit Gosnells are out there. And one of the things that allowed Gosnell to be this monster, as you accurately describe him, for so long was because the government didn't want to look that hard at this. Clearly, people have been complaining about this guy for years and years. But the state of Pennsylvania, under Tom Ridge, a Republican governor who was pretty darn pro-choice, really got very lax at inspecting these sorts of abortion clinics. And, we had this controversy here in Virginia, Greg. Whatever you think of the legality of abortion, an abortion clinic should be up to sanitary standards and everything should be up to code and everybody should be doing all the proper medical, you know, procedures. And the idea that because it's abortion and because it's politically controversial, we shouldn't look that hard at it strikes me as spectacularly wrongheaded. And in fact, Kermit Gosnell is what happens when these sorts of things happen. So, you know, you can't help but wonder how much does the government and folks who are pro-choice, because they want this to remain out of the public eye and unexamined, are they afraid if there are inspections, a whole bunch of abortion clinics are going to get shut down? At this point, we just don't know because the government in certain states just isn't looking that closely at them. And I think the Gosnell trial says, hey, we have to look at this. Even if you're pro-choice, you don't want the Kermit Gosnells of the world butchering women and butchering their children. And so I think a lot of, you know, the dynamics of the abortion issue may be shifting underneath our feet because we saw a horror that wasn't supposed to be occurring under the legal regime of Roe versus Wade.
And as we found out yesterday, when they impaneled this jury, every single one of them said they were pro-choice in the jury selection process. So clearly this wasn't a political statement by them. They were looking at the horrific facts of this case. Additional charges that he was convicted of included partial birth abortion beyond the legal standard in Pennsylvania of 24 weeks and counseling women improperly. On to martini number two now, Jim. Another day, another major Obama administration scandal. The Justice Department has been secretly obtaining months of phone records from Associated Press journalists. They phone records from over 20 different lines, potentially hundreds of different journalists in there, as you point out in the Jolt today, Jim. So if this president was already looking to annoy a press that was already licking its chops over more details on Benghazi and what everyone considers an abuse of power on the IRS story, Boy, target the Associated Press. That'll win them back.
Yeah, a couple things here. I mean, one is that, you know, technically, a prosecutor or law enforcement has the right to obtain a phone record. I mean, it's legal to obtain it. You go to a judge, you get a warrant, and you get the phone records. You see this in criminal investigations, and the DOJ claim is going to say, look, we weren't doing this because we wanted to monitor the reporters. We're doing this because we're trying to catch a leaker of classified information. Well, okay, except we've always had leaks of classified information. This goes back years, and they've always traditionally done it by bringing people in for questions and you know, interviewing them under oath and checking that against what we know. It's never been done before that for the DOJ to just start saying, hey, you know what, we're going to subpoena the phone records of a whole bunch of reporters, and we'll see what, you know, how we can figure that out. I look at this and say, look, if they had gone this for one reporter, then maybe you'd say, okay, we're pretty sure this you know, person who's leaking is talking to this one reporter, and we'll get to the bottom of that. The fact that they did at least at more than 20 phone lines, and this wasn't just business lines, this was people's home lines, this was people's cell phone lines, and this strikes me as a fishing expedition. Well, let's see who's talking to who, and see if we can figure out what we can get from that. And, oh, by the way, a side effect of this, and DOJ has to know this, is that when they subpoena all these phone records, no whistleblower who's the least bit wary, who has information about government wrongdoing that they want to expose, but they're worried about their career, they're worried about their personal safety, all that kind of stuff, well, they're never going to call the AP, the Associated Press, again. Basically, they have shut down the safety of any whistleblower. This is a very big deal to reporters. When a source comes to you and says, look, I've got a really big story that the public needs to know about, something wrong is going on here, but I'm afraid to, you know, to put my name out on it. When you give a source anonymity, the whole point of that is to protect them. And there are reporters who will go to jail before they will name their sources. It, you know, even though the government doesn't necessarily recognize the idea of a reporter source confidentiality, to reporters, this is a very big deal. Well, now, no Associated Press reporter can really give any source a guarantee of confidentiality because there's always a chance the Department of Justice will subpoena the phone records. And so basically, this just obliterates the relationship between reporters and their sources. And that's the reason reporters are so furious. And this is why this is so far beyond anything any Department of Justice has ever done before. And this is why people are using the adjective Nixonian. On each one of these, and we'll get into this in our third martini, but you notice the theme here. The theme is that, look, we're the good guys, and thus we can cut corners. The ends justify the means because what we're doing is so noble. We can do unprecedented stuff. We can really, you know, meddle into areas we've never meddled before because what we're doing is so righteous and good, it's okay with breaking some rules or bending some rules.
And surprisingly, the White House had no knowledge. So,
yes,
and,
of course.
Which may be true, but since they say that about everything, how do you know?
As I think it was David Ferdoso saying, it seems like the only part of government that Obama is in control of is SEAL Team 6. Everything else, he has no idea what's going on. Nobody ever tells him anything. He's totally out of the loop.
Back to Benghazi for martini number three now. Yesterday, the president held a joint press conference with British Prime Minister David Cameron after their meeting at the White House. Obviously, the president was asked to react to last week's dramatic testimony as well as the revelation at the end of last week that no fewer than 12 revisions were made to the Benghazi talking points, from lots of references to terrorism to basically no references to terrorism. And all of a sudden, Susan Rice is talking about a video. Subsequent reports show that then CIA Director David Petraeus called them useless once the revisions were made. Here's the president talking both in terms of what he claims was the reality in the days following, as well as his reaction to the email controversy.
The whole issue of this of talking points, frankly, throughout this process has been a sideshow. What we have been very clear about throughout was that immediately after this event happened, we were not clear who exactly had carried it out, how it had occurred, what the motivations were. It happened at the same time as we had seen attacks on U.S. embassies in Cairo as a consequence of this film. And nobody understood exactly what was taking place during the course of those first few days. And the emails that you allude to were provided by us to congressional committees. They reviewed them several months ago, concluded that, in fact, there was nothing afoul in terms of the process that we had used. And suddenly, 3 days ago, this gets spun up as if there's something new to the story. There's no there there.
Jim, other than congressional staffers going over those emails a couple months ago, I can't think of one thing he just said there that's true.
There's a line from my cousin Vinny that I am tempted to use, but it's a little off color for our podcast, Greg. In the Morning Jolt today, I kind of wrote, you know, when you have one scandal after another lining up like the planes landing in Newark Airport, you can see one following right behind the next one. You have a lot to organize. But I basically tried to level with my compatriots in the White House press corps and the Washington press corps, left, right, and center. Folks, we've seen this before. When you have an allegation of wrongdoing and you have some evidence of wrongdoing, Greg Hicks' testimony at that hearing gave you a whole bunch of stuff. It said, hey, the government's actions don't add up here. A lot of things don't make sense. It certainly looks like they were ignoring the warnings. Certainly looks like they did no effort to rescue the guys once the trouble started on that night. It sure as heck looks like they tried to cover it up by claiming it was all because of a YouTube video. And it sure as heck looks like they tried to intimidate him and other whistleblowers for straying from the official narrative on this. You add all that up, we've seen this before, okay? We've seen this in the, you know, the vast right-wing conspiracy statement from Hillary Clinton. When you really get caught and you have no further evidence to point to, it's an old saying of amongst lawyers, if you have the facts, argue the facts. If you have the law on your side, argue the law. And if you have neither the facts nor the law on your side, pound the table. Well, yesterday at the press conference, Barack Obama really pounded that table, that how dare we question him? The real story is the motivations of his opponents. I got to tell you, I'm not a big fan to see groups trying to use the Benghazi issue in their fundraising. I'm not a big fan of seeing, you know, American Crossroads putting up an ad on this. I don't really see there's any point of running TV commercials. Those are all kind of irrelevant to what the question put before the president at that moment. At that moment, we have a whole bunch of evidence that the government lied. And Obama is acting indignant. How dare we judge him? And then he had these stones to claim that asking these kinds of questions somehow disrespects the memory of the people who died in Benghazi. Obama is saying that the talking points issue is a sideshow to the exact same White House press corps that was, you know, giving Jay Carney such grief about it on Friday. He basically was to their faces saying this is not important. And the real question will be, how does the White House press corps respond to this? They have seen, through the course of those 14 edits, how it got put down to pabulum. It just became mush. We learned nothing from those talking points. They started out with a wrong contention. This may have been because of a video, but at least in there, there was the idea there were militants in there, that the CIA had warned about terror threats to this in Benghazi. There was at least real information in it. And then you can see, edit by edit, how less and less information gets in there. So you're left with mashed potatoes, dangling phrases of participle phrases and articles. That's about all that's left. And as a result of that, Obama thinks that's no big deal. And he thinks if you're interested in this, there's something wrong with you. And it's time for everybody to push back and say, no, Mr. President, there's something wrong with you. You keep insisting that there's no concern there. Well, you don't get to decide that, Mr. President. All right, the public gets to decide what's important. And if we look at this, we have a whole bunch of questions that aren't answered, and it certainly looks like you, your Secretary of State, and everybody else in your circle engaged in a cover-up. We have not seen the last chapter of this story written, Greg.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.